Okay, I'm with Tom for the Midweek Pod. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, pretty good, thank you. How are you? Still, I think I've still got a bit of a glow after the weekend, to be fair. I know it was only a draw, but it felt a bit like a win.
Well, it felt like a win in that if you go into the game thinking you're going to be annihilated and there was plenty of reason to think that might happen, then a draw feels okay. Yeah. It shouldn't be, I should be clear, where Manchester United is at, that we're delighted to get away with a draw. It's all a bit 1980s, isn't it?
It is.
And doing well in the Cups and hoping to beat Liverpool on a set-piece occasion.
Just to kind of put it out of their hands as well feels like a win.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it's so small time. It feels like this is like a Charlton Athletic pod or something like that. But, yeah, I guess that's the state of where we are at the moment.
Yeah, it is a little bit, yeah. I don't think it's small time to want your rivals to lose. Honestly, I think that's just football. So anyone but Liverpool. I'd take City, honestly, about on a par with Arsenal. I mean, obviously, Arsenal above City, because the only thing that gives me pause there is I rationalise City winning. I've said this on the pod many times.
Yeah, me too.
They're just cheats. And actually, while we're talking about it, it got really irate with the commentators yesterday. I was watching on Paramount Plus, but I think Darren Fletcher on the TNT sports feed was doing the same thing, really, and just not like avoiding talking about the 115 charges and why City are good, and just like presenting it as completely neutral, that they're just happened to get all these great players and this great manager and the sporting structure above it, and I just totally, they were a third rate club and just suddenly, with the right CEO, it became brilliant, right? And it's now the context of 15 years of state spending, and we know rampant systematic cheating is just never given. Never. Mm-hmm.
And as well, like, it's also kind of double standards in a way, really, as well, because when you watch a Forest game or you watch an Everton game, they talk about, like, their FFPs.
All the time, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas, yeah, with City, it's just forgotten about because they play pretty football.
So, I mean, since we're on this, I have to say, I feel maybe I'm totally contrarian on the general consensus in kind of football fandom, but a lot of football fans, especially Everton and Forest fans, for obvious reasons, are saying, oh, this is unfair. This is a way of locking the top six in place and no one else can compete and so on and so on. And Andy Burnham's been very vocal about Everton. I'm like, hang on a minute. It's a set of rules. You might not agree with the premise of them, and you might and the intended or unintended consequence that it makes quote unquote ambitious clubs harder to break into the top six, which it does, and the rules weren't in place for City at the start, or Chelsea before them, state aligned. And so there is an impact, intended or unintended, of kind of making it harder to bridge the gap to the larger clubs. But show me the way of like controlling spending otherwise. Because if there wasn't some kind of spending controls, given the hyper competition, both within the league and between leagues, the Premier League would probably look more like the Championship, where everyone's spending 120% of their income on wages and trying to outcompete each other, and owners would have to cover the losses, right? So owners want PSR or FFP of some kind, even if they complain about it when they're caught. And if you have rules, you break them or you don't break them, and they broke them, and so there's punishment. I just think with Andy Burnham, Labour mayor of Manchester, if it was some other industry where there was corporate malfeasance, he'd be going after them. He'd be like sticking it to the man, rightly so. But because he has his tribal hat on, somehow this is deeply unfair. Clubs voted for the rules. Clubs voted for independent commission. Clubs voted for the structure of their PSSR rules. The clubs are the Premier League. It's not the Premier League as some kind of Illuminati, like fucking over Everton and Forest for the fun of it, you know? And I just thought, anyway, I feel like I'm a bit contrarian on that, but what's the big deal? I actually think La Liga's structure is better than retrospective punishments. Now, we may get to, in a few years' time, a situation where everyone complies with the rules because the retrospective punishments have had an effect of keeping everyone in line. But in La Liga, they do it preemptively. They say, what's your budget? how much income do you expect to get this year? Do we believe it or do we not believe it? Therefore, you can only register players up to this level of spending. And it keeps everyone in line. And I think it's a better system, honestly. But it has the same goal of constraining spending.
Yeah, because there needs to be checks and balances. Like, we've seen a number of clubs in the lower echelons of the Football League be fucked over big time by it, by owners coming in and thinking they're the big daddy, and then 2 years into the little project, then they're just walking away and just leaving the club wrecked.
Yeah.
And the community that exists around that football club wrecked as well. And there has to be some type of system to stop that from happening. I mean, you talk to like a Bury fan, you talk to a Chester fan, they would say exactly that. Like, their livelihoods in a lot of cases have been ruined. A lot of the fans as well. Like, I mean, they still get great gates even at the lower levels, but still, like, it's not quite the same when you go into what's like 10th tier football compared to what it was when you were in the fourth or fifth tier or even third tier. There has to be checks and balances, and yeah, it's not some like massive Matt Letizia conspiracy theory where like people, like the top football clubs of the Premier League are changing the weather and also trying to keep the likes of Everton and Liverpool out of, and Everton and Forest out of, yeah, the big six. It's actually for like good reasons. Maybe the implementation, like you say, can be changed and can be altered. And obviously when you first create these types of things, they're always going to be teething problems and stuff like that. But I think the actual idea of it is for good reasons, to be honest.
Yeah, and talking of implementation, we may move to a squad cost rule. It is clear that the clubs are debating this because there's a lot of leaks at the moment. So we may move to squad cost, which UEFA are doing. It would make a lot of sense to align with UEFA, given that the larger clubs are all going to be in Europe. Or in fact, the way European competition has kind of ballooned, we might have 9 English clubs in like half of the league in European competition this next season. So, yeah. It's quite a substantial number. So we may align with that, which is UEFA's going from 90% of revenue to 85% to 70%. If they implemented it in the Premier League, I suspect they'd do it on a tiered basis where clubs in European competitions would be at, let's say, 70%, and clubs not in European competitions would have some kind of extra leeway, maybe 80 or 85% or something like that, to even out the glide slope a little bit. There's been some talk of anchoring, which is this idea that your wage cap is a certain amount above the wage cap of the bottom team, or it's some kind of devious sexual practice. I'm not sure. It's at least one of those things. There's also, I'm talking of changing in the rules. There was some ideas floated that might move to a luxury tax system, which they have in baseball in America, where if you go over your cap, you have to pay out money to the rest of the league. And I think there it really matters, like, what the percentage is. If it's like 10% and then it's just like a golden ticket for state-sponsored clubs to spend as much as they want, basically. If it's 500%, like real teeth, then I think even state-sponsored clubs might go, maybe not. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Like, and UEFA rules are still bite. And then the one other thing, what did you think about the fact that in the football regulator bill, there's a carve out for geopolitical interests? Clause 37.
Am I shocked? No. I guess that it's gone too far. I guess the horse has already bolted. So,
yeah.
And I guess they're just too morally bankrupt and weak to kind of just put that in there. I mean, I imagine, and by all reports as well, like the clubs who aren't state sponsored are pretty livid about it, and they do want checks and balances on this. But I mean, I'm just not surprised at all, to be honest. Like,
well, the whole point about states buying clubs is for political influence. I think the sports watching term is redundant now. Honestly, you may remember a year ago I had Kerem Zidane from the Sports Politica newsletter, excellent sort of analysis of geopolitical interest in sport. Great newsletter, by the way, if you want to understand any of this. And I'm not being paid. It's just a really good, really good piece. Anyway, I think the whole point is that it's not just about washing your reputation. It's about building those political links. And it's proven to be successful to the point that the UK government is opening the kimono and saying, come in, and with this clause, because they understand that if you're buying natural gas from the UAE Qatar, or oil from Abu Dhabi, or oil from Saudi, or that is commingled with a weapons deal or two, that is in the UK's interest. And we've seen this previously, because the new updated football director's test, fit and proper person's test, included the language around sanctions. And sanctions are not, you're bad, we're sanctioning you. They're, you're bad, plus we don't like you politically. That's what the list is. Because it's like Mohammed bin Salman is not sanctioned for chopping up journalists and imprisoning women or dissidents or people who tweet a thing he doesn't like. 34 years for tweeting something they didn't like, that kind of thing. There's no sanctions there.
And just spraying bullets at all the migrants who were on the borders.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah. That's grim, that was. I mean, so much, like, I often get, I mean, since we're down this route, I often get people pushing back and saying, hey, why aren't you talking about Israel right now? And obviously, as a human, I look at that and it's horrendous what's happening to people. And that's not even getting into the politics and both sides in anything. It's just saying, as a human, there's a lot of suffering going on. And I can well understand why a lot of our listeners are angry with what's going on. And my response is almost always like, it's just not a football question, really. And I'm not being kind of glib about that. It's not a football question. Now, it is a football question with Saudi buying Newcastle, Qatar trying to buy United and failing, and UAE owning Manchester City. And that's the only reason, folks. It's not some big conspiracy.
Yeah, unless you kind of include like Israeli teams being in Europe, or like Israel being, well, because obviously they almost qualified for the Euros, didn't they? Yeah, and being kicked out of tournaments
that does become a question.
Russia were, and I agree with the arguments for that. But yeah, to kind of link it to especially what we talk about and British football, there isn't. I mean, obviously, like very obviously, every single humane person is and shocked and appalled of what's happening over there. It's horrendous, but I mean, it's not really, not to be glib about it or to like just gloss over it, but it isn't really related to what we talk about on this pod, really.
No. And I suspect we'll get into the USA World Cup in the lead up to that and talk about the politics of that. I mean, it is very different, like, and I'm not going to stand here and defend the US's human rights record at all. I mean, both domestically, with police shootings and violence that happens here, and the insanity of healthcare. And believe me, I've lived that for the last 3 years, how exactly that works. But it is different because it's not really driven from the top down in the US. The 2026 World Cup is very much a commercial exercise. So I think we have to put it in a different context while saying, yeah, there are problems with this country, both foreign policy, military industrial complex, and domestic policy.
Oh yeah, they're all in Gaza as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. US made weapons and all of that. Handily, it's US made weapons.
The UK's role as well, but like, to be honest.
If you really want to get into it, the UAE's supporting the RSFs. So that's what is, shortcut it, what used to be the Janjaweed in Sudan, and the civil war that's going on there, and just kind of brutal effects on civilian population. So the UAE is sponsoring that quite frequently with Western weapons. So, hey, it's all co-mingled in one way or another.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice and light, this.
Yeah, nice and light start. I don't know how we got into that, but, you know, hey. All right. Well, we just started with
Kind of does just show, like, how, I know, like, how people always say, oh, keep politics out of football or whatever, but, like, it's just, you can't. It's so intermingled.
No, you can't. And there's a line, right? So, and just to come, like, close the bookend on this one. Yeah, part of the reason why we haven't got into Israeli-Gaza politics is because it's just a little bit further out of scope, even if you can draw lines. Because, of course, everything is geopolitically connected. So, all right. Moving sharply left. John Murta is leaving Manchester United in the least surprising news ever.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I know. Are there any tears shed? No.
None outside of his immediate family, I imagine.
No,
he can't be it. can't be crying about it that much. He's probably going to get a lovely payoff. He's had a lovely wage for a few years. He's got, I was at United on my CV, and
yeah,
and he'll get plenty of jobs out of it from that for basically failing upwards. And yeah, there you go. Happy days for him as well, I guess, in some ways, because
yeah,
I mean, he's never going to get an equivalent job like it. He's not going to be, oh, wow, I can't believe John Murta's now at Arsenal sporting director or anything like that. He's probably just going to go a little bit like Ed Woodward has, into kind of nowhere. But he's got nice little payoff for it. So,
yeah.
Happy days.
Yeah. I mean, it feels, again, to simplify, it feels like it's the Peter Principle in work with John Murta. I mean, he was the football administration, youth administration, and then somehow got promoted above his kind of skill level, and ended up in like major transfer negotiation for Manchester United. And there was like nothing on the previous 10 years of his CV to demonstrate that he had the skill to do that. And clearly paying three or four times over the odds for Anthony demonstrates that he did not. So, I mean, it's all part of like, and to be more serious, it's all part of the restructuring, isn't it? I mean, we're going to separate out the different components under Ashworth. Ashworth will be the head football executive reporting into the CEO, and there will be a series of people reporting up into Ashworth. So technical will be Jason Wilcox. I don't know whether we're going to get a new head of recruitment or whether it will still be Andy O'Brien, but unclear that one is. It looks like Darren Fletcher will get some kind of role, like in between the age group teams and the first team. Someone needs to do that, like pathway director of some kind. Mm. There's obviously a data and analytics team that's been pretty much strengthened out, and a medical team as well. So you can kind of see the big picture now, and I don't know where Murta would fit in that, even if you kind of downgraded his role.
Yeah.
We can say we got Alejandro Garnacho out of it. So
yeah,
that was part of the trolley dash, wasn't it? The pre-Brexit deal, trolley dash, Hannibal, Willy Kambwala.
Yeah, well, that, yeah.
Garnacho. So, you know, actually, you can say...
Was Diallo that?
I meant Diallo, yeah, although different because they paid a huge fee for him.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I mean, they paid about $9 million.
That fee is worth it as well, because after the Liverpool win, so...
Yeah, yeah, 40 million euros just for one win, yeah, yeah. Like, a bit like Diego Forlan, right?
Yeah, but, yeah. So, yeah, probably similar career paths at United as well, probably. We had to Villarreal and boss it.
Yeah. So anyway, bye-bye, John Murta. Good luck. You were saying before we came on air that Ed Woodward has got a new job on the board of some kind of charity.
I saw he was, I think, like Bloomsbury charity, and he's like the football director or something at this charity. And the photo of him is just hilarious because he just looks... Even in like this photo of him like signing to be part of this charity, he still kind of just looks out of his depth. It just feels like, I don't know. There's just something about him that just makes me laugh every time I see him. But yeah, again, like I said, a bit like John Murta, just kind of like falling into obscurity a little bit. And like, what's he really going to do? I guess, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him get a job.
Yeah. I mean, Peter Kenyon ended up, he went to Chelsea and then, was it Milan? And
yeah.
So I guess football executives do move around. It's just like, if you've been part of what looks like a failed project, it seems. I mean, administratively, he has like, he must have, even if he doesn't have the chops in certain areas, he must have a good view. You'd think there'd be an ambitious club somewhere that would like, maybe one that wants to grow commercially. He's got to have those skills.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, couldn't care less, honestly. But you know,
no, not really.
All right, let's get to a few questions before we preview Bournemouth. I know you're managing your team tonight. In fact, actually, tell us about your team. Who do you manage?
So they're called Beasts and Old Boys Association. We are in Nottinghamshire Division One Nottinghamshire Senior League Division One, and we were doing all right earlier in the season, but now I think on a 6-game losing streak. We're playing against Keyworth tonight in a big mid-table clash.
Are you up for the sack? Have you had a vote of confidence in you?
I should be. I do want to hand my resignation in. I just don't know if anyone would take the job. So I'm probably, it's a bit like, who was that person who did that very recently? I can't remember who it was.
In football?
I think it was football. It might have been in a different sport. Anyway.
resigned and no one else would take the job.
He resigned and then they were like, no, we don't want you to resign. And then people were complaining about it. He made it all about him. I can't remember who it was, but someone might know, even though I've got like given them basically no details at all.
No, I don't even know what sport is. Tom. Good story. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're just trying to deflect from the fact that you're getting the sack.
The problem is our goalkeeper, who's really good, is also an Aussie Rules player. He plays for Great Britain at Aussie Rules. So he hasn't been playing lately. So I've had to play myself in goal and also manage the team. So it's been difficult. The boys, I'm not going to say anything about them, just in case they listen. But not pulling their weight. Well, they are, to be fair.
That kind of level, there probably is a fair amount of weight.
There is. Everyone's got a job. So obviously everyone's had like, everyone's going to have a day job today. And then we're going to go to the game at 7:45. Under lights, which is always fun, and see how it is. I'll update people tomorrow. But yeah, first year in the job. It was going pretty well at some point, but now, and you just do the same team talk every week. Come on, guys, it's time to put it right today. I know we're on a bit of a losing streak, but we need to keep our confidence high. I mean, it's inspirational stuff. So yeah, you can see why.
You want to get a European Cup out there and go, don't even think about it. You can't even touch it. You won't even be able to look at it unless you give your all out there.
That works. I might use that tonight.
Or who was the manager who went on that absolutely foul-mouthed rant in the dressing room? It's a magical clip. I forget. He was like Athletic manager or something.
Bring your dinner.
Yeah. That one. I forget.
And bring your fucking dinner. I can't remember who that was either. Yeah, I don't think he was
Guy
in
Ritchie,
the job very long.
Not Guy Ritchie, but yeah, similar language.
And you got the Troy Deeney as well, where he was like talking about their players and how they couldn't kick the ball properly and stuff. I mean, that kind of does happen at our level, to be fair. You do get a few lads who don't have the greatest technique in the world. But hopefully, again, they're not listening. And I'm not going to name names apart from... We do have like a couple of lads who are like genuinely really, really good. Like one lad, he used to play for Bochum under 18s. He's German. Right. We've got like five players with PhDs in the team, which is like the most, we're basically the most middle class football team that probably ever existed and the most and the highest percentage of PhD players like a team has ever probably had. It's a bit of a weird team. And that's probably why we don't win.
Yeah, they're working out the
angles. North Mansfield against these lads who, built.
You're saying your lads are a bit soft, aren't you?
Yes, we are. Like,
you don't like it up you.
No.
You go to North Mansfield on a wet Wednesday night.
Yeah, up to Medden Vale. And yeah, me included, we sometimes shirk a challenge or two. Yeah.
All right, very disappointed. All right, let's get to some questions. Glacier MUFC 1 says, could finishing outside the European spots be a blessing in disguise? It would allow us to go into next season with a smaller squad and maybe accelerate the clear out. No need for players like Eriksen, Amrabat, or a fifth senior centre back.
Absolutely. Look at the way what it's done to Tottenham this season. Like, they've had a bit of an injury crisis at times, but they've been able to handle it better than others have because of not having European football. I mean, it's not done Chelsea that good, but they're an absolute basket case of a club. But I think, I mean, I probably speak for most people with this. I'd rather not be in the Europa League. I'd rather not be in the Europa Conference League and just concentrate on the other three trophies, to be honest, rather than being in those, because I mean, ultimately they don't really matter. I mean, it's nice to win the Europa League every now and again, but it doesn't feel that exciting, especially even when you're winning it, and especially when your rivals are in the Champions League and potentially in the final and winning it and stuff, and you like, I don't even want to celebrate this win because it just feels a bit embarrassing, to be honest. It feels a bit Charlton Athletic.
UEFA Cup used to be really important though.
Yeah, it did.
And the Cup Winners' Cup was the slightly oddball one, but the UEFA Cup was really
But I suppose when
important.
You only have like one team from the country or two, if obviously they win the European Cup and they were in it again, a bit like obviously when Villa and Liverpool and Forest kept winning it those times. It's a little bit different when the UEFA Cup's basically like for all the second best teams in Europe, whereas like this is for like the fifth best
teams. No, it's the sixth, seventh, eighth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and compared to the glamour of the Champions League, it feels a bit less. It's very true. I mean, a lot of fans obviously like the Europa League, because you get some different aways. You're not going to Barcelona again. It's a kind of antithesis of what the European Super League is. So I definitely understand that. I mean, to the question, smaller squad, yes. I mean, I think there'll be a rebalancing of the nature of the squad anyway. Not necessarily going on the cheap because they're looking to save money, although we'll get to United's PSR position. But I think Ratcliffe has indicated quite clearly that they're looking for the, well, he said it in that interview, didn't he? The next Mbappe, not this Mbappe. And probably the strategy of getting older, very expensive players in, which has basically always failed, is at an end now. And so there'll obviously be question marks about Varane. I think he's out of contract with an option this summer. Casemiro's got a few more years left, but I'm sure they would look to offload him for zero fee if they could. Just take the impairment charge there. And Eriksen, out of contract. I'm sure they won't offer him another one. And if United aren't in the Champions League, they probably won't offer Johnny Evans another contract either. Although I think he's done well, probably had many more games than he expected this season.
I think one of the blueprint in terms of like squad management out there is and squad recruitment is Real Madrid. And I know like formerly they would have just bought the best players in the world, obviously like the Galacticos and stuff, but now they do it so well by buying the best youngsters in the world. Like you say, like the next Mbappe is where they've got Endrick obviously coming soon. Like they've got Vinny straight from Brazil, like Bellingham Rodrigo. Being the next best thing. And like Camavinga, Tchouameni, like they do it. They have changed their recruitment system to really be very new school, which I didn't think they'd ever do. I thought they'd kind of stick to the bullshit that they kind of carry on.
Yeah, well, they had that Zidane's and Pavon's.
Yeah, exactly.
Galacticos plus kids,
Yeah, and if they get like a proper manager in, that they'd be like really, really good. I think Ancelotti's holding them back a little bit.
Saying Ancelotti's not a proper manager?
I feel like he's just very old school, and he's very good at what he does, but like I just kind of watching them last night against City, and I'm like, I feel like it's just going to be exactly the same as it was last season, and I feel like they need to become a bit more sophisticated tactically, personally. And I know I got a bit of pushback on Twitter when I said that yesterday, but I think with the team that they've got, like if they had someone like Xabi Alonso, and I think that's probably who they're going to get next summer, they would be really, really good. Whereas now I think they're a bit too go out and play lads, which has worked for Real Madrid for a lot of years, but I don't know if it does work now.
With a younger team.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they won the Champions League 2 years ago, so like they obviously worked. But I mean, like in the most ridiculous and spellbinding and metaphysical way I've ever seen a Champions League be won.
There were some fine goals last night, although I'm not giving City any credit. Filthy cheats that they are. Jared Kyle, Jen's got the red on Twitter, says, can you explain what proof of funds actually means? Does that mean that Sheikh Jassim failed to submit required proof of funds documentation? Seems like they tried to rely on bank guarantee instead of submitting appropriate paperwork. If so, why might they do that in your opinion? Honestly, I think a lot of this is a smokescreen. So if you're making any transaction, typically a bank guarantee is fine. I don't know why exactly and haven't dug into why that might not have been sufficient in this case, but there does seem to be a disagreement about exactly what the nature of proof of funds were required. I mean, normally that's investment bank to investment bank. That's totally fine. There wouldn't be any difficulties there in any kind of private equity transaction. It's part of the due diligence process. So I don't know exactly what went wrong in this case, but I think the bigger picture is Ratcliffe just offered more, much more on a per share basis, rolling up to $1 billion more for the club. Now, he didn't offer to buy it all. He offered to buy all the Glazer shares, and that became difficult, as he's explained afterwards, with the New York Stock Exchange listed shares having to provide an equal deal for everyone, or feeling like he had to, a threat of litigation. So did that instead. 28% of the club will be owned by 28.7% will be owned by the rest of the year. And he just offered much, much more. And in the tender document, he's basically the Glazers have put a floor and he's signed that deal. So he's agreeing with that deal and he will meet that floor. And I think that's why I feel fairly confident that there is a pathway to him owning the club outright within the next 3 years when that that structure runs out effectively. So anyway, that's a wider answer to this question. I don't know why the proof of funds wasn't sufficient, other than, well, like, the obvious answer is they didn't have it. It's like, the for whatever reason, the Qatari government decided this wasn't the play, because if it was the play, they could just spend whatever they wanted. Clearly, it's the sovereign wealth entity. Any thoughts? 90s suit says, any thoughts on how PSR will affect United summer transfer window for United and clubs in general? Yeah, I've got a few. I think United are actually in pretty good position because they cut their wages quite significantly. Last summer, they brought in younger players with a lower wage bracket. And I think they will probably look to shed some of the higher earners this time out. So there's that. They will still have quite a high amortization charge if you look at the amount owed on transfers. So both cash going out, but the amortization charge on all those players. So that will be quite high unless they get rid of some players. They're not going to get rid of Anthony, for example. The COVID season will drop off, although there was a lot of mitigations for that. So I don't know that actually helps United. United's EBITDA was over $250 million. So depending on their cost base this year, they could have quite some headroom that will be tempered by not being in the Champions League, which will be, I don't know, it's between 50 and 100 million over and above the Europa League, depending on how far you go, minus the wage cut that is in place for it when you're not in the Champions League, which is 25%. So I don't know. Haven't got the I don't know fully, because we don't know how much United will claim for youth, women's infrastructure, and so on. But I think it'll be okay. Generally speaking, the Premier League clubs overspent in the COVID years when no one else did. And that's why you're seeing Forest and Everton in trouble now. Everyone was like, we could make a strategic advantage over La Liga and Ligue 1 and Serie A right now by continuing spending. And they did that. And that has had some downstream impacts. What are your thoughts? How much do you want United to spunk in the transfer market?
I mean, I always feel like just getting rid of certain people is maybe the biggest priority. Like Ferran, Casemiro. I mean, people, like you say, they won't get rid of Anthony, but someone like Anthony, but would be nice to go as well. But I think if you kind of get rid of those big earners and you start to kind of create more of an even structure throughout the whole club, then that's kind of, I think, what needs to be done first before you start bringing other people in, them going, yeah, but Casemiro's on that much amount of money, so I want to be on that same type of things. That needs to kind of be sorted. And it has in some respect, obviously, like getting rid of De Gea and Ronaldo. It's like two massive, like, I guess, positives that Ten Hag's also done. Like, he's made bold moves in that respect. And I think two more to do that would be, yeah, Casemiro and Varane. And then you start to hopefully create more of a, I guess, paid by your ability rather than just paid overinflated pay. And that hopefully will allow us to attract players who actually want to play for their club. I think Ange Postecoglou said something really prescient and right. And what should be the way that United should be thinking is that he was signing players that, not players that want to play in the Champions League, but players who want to play for Tottenham. And when he signed Van der Ven, who's obviously fucking really, really good and would have been a great signing for United. And I always think, like, Ten Hag is Dutch and he only signs players from the Dutch league and or Dutch people. How did he not get this guy? But Van der Ven wanted to play for Tottenham. He didn't want to just play for a Champions League club. And that's the sort of personality that we should be signing. So I think that there are definitely certain players that I would look at, but that, and I guess this is Dan Ashworth's job, one of the, especially is apparently great at creating such a culture. And apparently that's what he did at England. Like, that's one of the main things that he should be identifying. I think Henry Winter, who lost his job today, to huge news. I think he was saying that Dan Ashworth's
got... He's signing for NQAT.
He is, and he's kicking me out. I'm being made redundant for Henry.
I don't think we can afford Henry.
He was on 500 grand a year, and that isn't
Like, I wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I've heard that from lead
sports writer. Yeah, yeah. I think that's about par.
Multiple sources. That is
I'm afraid we're on Vanarama wages at NQAT.
I'm on 500 grand a year.
I'm not. How did you manage to pull that one off?
Don't really know.
You sure it's not rubles?
Yeah, maybe.
Zimbabwean dollar.
My accountant's going to be in a bit of trouble. I can't even work. Oh, yeah. Basically, Henry, when they said that Dan Ashworth's got like a massive, did he say a laptop of like almost every footballer in the world and their personality and their skill set or something? So hopefully he'll look into that.
I'd be suspicious what's on that laptop.
How is
anyone who walks around with a large spreadsheet?
With loads of like 15-year-old like lads on there, like about their personalities and what they like.
Yeah.
Physical attributes.
Dodgy. Dodgy. Yes. I mean, he's not coming in to be the transfer guru.
No.
But he's coming in to give structural to all of it. Yeah. So, related to at Yee74782273, I don't know whether that's his crypto wallet key or whatever, but is there a chance a limited transfer budget and loss of many players could lead to next season being even worse than this? I don't think so. I think there's some special circumstances this season with a mega injury crisis, which I hope they're doing a root and branch review of exactly why it's happened and identifying manager training, sports science, medical, whatever it is. Bad luck, solar rays. I don't know. I hope they're identifying it, but I'd be surprised. I think I'm much more confident the right structure will help them get the right players in the door this summer. They're all going to be good players. It's Manchester United and we can afford good players. I'd be surprised. All right. Succession planning is key to the success of any organization, says Tarek Amir, friend of the pod. With that in mind, how confident are you? Davina Moyes taking over from Kath in reception. I will not have that slander against Kath in reception. 54 years at the club she was.
Yeah. So I love seeing videos of her like just hugging people as they came in and stuff. It's lovely. So sweet.
Have you got time before you go for a quick Bournemouth?
Yeah, five minutes. The boys are going to be, well, if we lose tonight, and this is to blame me turning up late.
You'll have plenty of time on your hands.
Oh, yes.
In the morning. where are you playing, by the way, if anyone wants to come and heckle?
That's true. Where we play, Keyworth Football Club, home ground.
All right.
I don't think anyone
might not be out in time for people to come and heckle, but next time.
Very unlikely. It's the kickoffs in an hour and 15 minutes. No, an hour and a half.
Bournemouth, I mean, they're not going to get relegated. They changed out their manager last summer to move forward. They haven't really moved forward, but for a small club with probably the lowest wage budget in the league, they overperform still.
Yeah, and they play a certain type of nice football, to be honest. They've obviously got one of these Basque managers, which are all the rage at the moment. It seems to be, they're almost like the go-to managers of European football and succeeding almost everywhere they go. They signed some nice players. They have a Hungarian lad, Milos Kerkez, who's been strongly linked to Chelsea. He was also linked to United at one point as well. A really, really good prospect, left back, like electric going forward, bit suspect defensively, but he's like 19. And obviously they've made some like interesting signings like Kluivert, and they do play a nice brand of football. Obviously Solanke's been excellent for them. He seemed like he was always going to be like a Premier League flop for a few years, but he's really come into his own. And I guess like an outside shot for England, if there was a couple of injuries or something. But I said this before the Fulham game when we lost it, but I feel like they're very much a team that United should beat. They're not particularly bamboozling. They're not physical, particularly not like they don't play like vertical football like Brentford. They're kind of, I don't know what Bournemouth always are, play nice football, but a bit soft. And their team that United usually okay against. But like I said this before the Fulham game where we lost at home. So like I said before the Brentford game as well, like you can't use any logic. You can't use any rationale for what United team are going to turn up. Who knows?
Well, yeah. And who's fit? Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the players are back now, aren't they? Except the defenders.
Yeah, it's all the centre-backs, isn't it?
All the centre-backs. Varane came off again. Evans came off. Are either of those fit? Lindelof has had this. He's out for probably the rest of the season, right? So
Martinez is out
for another month. So we've got Maguire and probably Kwamballa again.
I guess
I thought they did fine against Liverpool. Mm-hmm. They're both good box players, so
yeah.
Box defenders, as the terminology goes. I think
the only thing with Kwamballa, like, and obviously I'm only picking holes because we're Man United, but like, I just wonder about his ability on the ball. Like,
yeah,
he was excellent in, especially in his physicality with his duels with Nunes, like pushing him off the ball. Like, especially if Nunes is a big strapping lad, and Kwamballa being able to do that is amazing. But yeah, it's just his ability on the ball, and especially in a game where we should have more possession than we did against Liverpool, that he may come a little bit unstuck. But I guess it's a nice chance for him to shine in a different way than he did against Liverpool.
That was the general feeling at age group level as well with him, that his passing was a bit erratic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably true, but he is a good defender, and he's got pace,
yeah,
and he's got good instincts. When he made a mistake to give away the ball and had to chase back, yeah, he got the right side of the defender. He didn't dive in recklessly. He did all the right things after making the mistake. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
About him that I like. Whether that's good enough for United, I mean, if he wants it, I think he could be the fourth choice next season. Mm-hmm. He might want more football than that. So we'll see. Which, you know, it does matter in your development. If he's getting 10 games a season, I don't know if that helps him. Really, mm-hmm, better to get 40.
Yeah.
You'd think. Not that any United defenders can make 40 games a season at the moment. Not. So, probably only Dalot. And the rest of the team, that is kind of interesting. I guess it'd be a question mark whether Mount gets a start instead of Casemiro. Probably not, but yeah, you know, you wonder at some point you got to play him, right?
Yeah, you would hope so.
All right. Well, I was going to say United got to win, but I'm like, what's the point? We're 11 so points behind point now, fifth.
Yeah. We've just got the cup final and cup semi-final and hopefully the final, which is...
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want it to fall off a cliff, United's form. I mean, we've got a good run coming up. Bournemouth, Burnley, the Coventry game in the cup, and Crystal Palace. And like, so the next five games are all like winnable. You could get some form going. It's just that United had no consistency in these kind of games. But you look over the shoulder, West Ham 48 points, Newcastle 47, Chelsea 44, Brighton 43, Wolves 42, Bournemouth 41. I mean, we're only actually a couple of defeats away from like losing places and ending up right in mid-table.
Yeah.
And then Ten Hag really would be a goner. If United finished 9th or 10th, come on, couldn't possibly. There's no mitigation for that.
Absolutely. It's just,
so yeah, victory needed. I was looking at the win odds. 40% Bournemouth, 24% draw, 36% United. Really? Have we gone that far that Bournemouth? Come on.
That's a bit mad.
Can't be. I can't. All right. We shall leave it there. Shall let you go to try and save your job.
Yeah.
We'll be back after.
And save some shots Eric as well, because I'm in goal again.
Well, there you go. Hopefully it's not 28 shots against and you have a better pivot in front of you to stop those shots happening in the first place.
Yeah, no, I've taken the Ten Hag approach. I don't know if you read Jonathan Wilson's piece in the. I'm making myself late. Jonathan Wilson's piece in the Guardian was a funny one about the United game, basically how like Ten Hag is going against the grain and just allowing teams to have space, and that's what we're doing on a Saturday afternoon as well, but it's not quite working the same.
You want to see if you can recruit Andre Onana, who's, for all his faults, has very good data this season.
Yeah.
Very good.
Made a great save. His
post-shot saves versus expected goals is very good. Anyway, I may have bungled that stat, but yeah, it's all looking quite good and much improved from the beginning of the season. So, all right, we'll let you go. Thank you, everyone. We will catch you after the weekend game. Thanks a lot. Bye now.